Chapter 133. The project of Mr. Ralph Nickleby and his friend approaching a successful issue becomes unexpectedly known to another party, not admitted into their confidence, in an old house, dismal, dark, and moldy, which seemed to have withered, like himself, and to have grown yellow and shriveled in hoarding him from the light of day, as he had in hoarding his money, lived Arthur Gride. Meager old chairs and tables, of spare and bony make, and hard and cold as miser's hearts, were ranged, in grim array, against the gloomy walls. Attenuated presses, grown lank and lantern-jawed in guarding the treasures they enclosed, and tottering, as though from constant fear and dread of thieves, shrunk up in dark corners, whence they cast no shadows on the ground, and seemed to hide, and cower from observation. A tall grim clock upon the stairs, with long lean hands and famished face, ticked in cautious whispers, and when it struck the time, in thin and piping sounds, like an old man's voice, rattled, as if it were pinched with hunger. No fireside couch was there, to invite repose and comfort. Elbow chairs there were, but they looked uneasy in their minds, cocked their arms suspiciously and timidly, and kept upon their guard. Others were fantastically grim and gaunt, as having drawn themselves up to their utmost height, and put on their fiercest looks, to stare all comers out of countenance. Others, again, knocked up against their neighbors, or leant for support against the wall somewhat ostentatiously, as if to call all men to witness that they were not worth the taking. The dark square lumbering bedstead seemed built for restless dreams. The moldy hangings seemed to creep in scanty folds together, whispering among themselves, when rustled by the wind, their trembling knowledge of the tempting wares that lurked within the dark and tight-locked closets. From out the most spare and hungry room in all this spare and hungry house there came, one morning, the tremulous tones of old Gride's voice, as it feebly chirruped forth the fag end of some forgotten song, of which the burden ran. Tarantantu, throw the old shoe, and may the wedding be lucky. Which he repeated, in the same shrill quavering notes, again and again, until a violent fit of coughing obliged him to desist, and to pursue in silence, the occupation upon which he was engaged. This occupation was, to take down from the shelves of a worm-eaten wardrobe a quantity of frowsy garments, one by one, to subject each to a careful and minute inspection, by holding it up against the light, and after folding it with great exactness, to lay it on one or other of two little heaps beside him. He never took two articles of clothing out together, but always brought them forth, singly, and never failed to shut the wardrobe door, and turn the key, between each visit to its shelves. The snuff-colored suit, apostrophe said Arthur Gride, surveying a threadbare coat. Did I look well in snuff color? Let me think. Apostrophe, the result of his cogitations appeared to be unfavorable, for he folded the garment once more, laid it aside, and mounted on a chair to get down another, chirping while he did so. Young, loving, and fair, oh what happiness there! The wedding is sure to be lucky. They always put in, young, apostrophe said old Arthur, but songs are only written for the sake of rhyme, and this is a silly one, that the poor country people sang, when I was a little boy. Though stop young is quite right too, it means the bride, yes. He. It means the bride. Oh dear, that's good. That's very good. And true besides, quite true. Apostrophe, in the satisfaction of this discovery, he went over the verse again, with increased expression, and a shake or two here and there. He then resumed his employment. The bottle green, apostrophe said old Arthur, the bottle green was a famous suit to wear, and I bought it very cheap at a pawnbroker's, and there was he, a tarnished shilling in the waistcoat pocket. To think that the pawnbroker shouldn't have known there was a shilling in it. I knew it. I felt it when I was examining the quality. Oh, what a dull dog of a pawnbroker. It was a lucky suit too, this bottle green. The very day I put it on first, old Lord Mallowford was burned to death in his bed, and all the post obits fell in. I'll be married in the bottle green. Peg. Peg Sladursky, I'll wear the bottle green. Apostrophe apostrophe, this call, loudly repeated twice or thrice at the room door, brought into the apartment a short, thin, weasen, blear-eyed old woman, palsy-stricken and hideously ugly, who, wiping her shriveled face upon her dirty apron, inquired, in that subdued tone in which deaf people commonly speak, was the delay calling, or only the clock a-striking? My hearing gets so bad, I never know which is which. But when I hear a noise, I know it must be one of you, because nothing else never stirs in the house. Apostrophe, me, Peg, me, apostrophe, said Arthur Gride, tapping himself on the breast, to render the reply more intelligible. You, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Peg. And what do you want? Apostrophe, I'll be married in the bottle green, apostrophe, cried Arthur Gride. It's a deal too good to be married in, master, apostrophe, rejoined Peg, after a short inspection of the suit. Haven't you got anything worse than this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, nothing that'll do, apostrophe, replied old Arthur. Why not do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Peg. Why don't you wear your everyday clothes, like a man, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, they ain't becoming enough. Peg, apostrophe, returned her master. Not what enough? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Peg. Becoming. Apostrophe, becoming what? Apostrophe, said Peg, sharply. Not becoming too old to wear? Apostrophe, Arthur Gride muttered an imprecation on his housekeeper's deafness, as he roared in her ear. Not smart enough. I want to look as well as I can. Apostrophe, look. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Peg. If she's as handsome as you say she is, she won't look much at you, master, take your oath of that. And as to how you look yourself, pepper and salt, bottle green, sky blue, or tartan plaid will make no difference in you. Apostrophe, with which consolatory assurance, Peg Sladursky gathered up the chosen suit, and folding her skinny arms upon the bundle, stood, mouthing, and grinning, and blinking her watery eyes, like an uncouth figure in some monstrous piece of carving. You're in a funny humor, and you, Peg? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Arthur, with not the best possible grace. Why, isn't it enough to make me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, rejoined the old woman. I shall, soon enough, be put out, though, if anybody tries to domineer it over me. And so I give you notice, master. Nobody shall be put over Peg Sladursky's head, after so many years. You know that, and so I needn't tell you. That won't do for me, no, no, nor for you. Try that once, and come to ruin, ruin, ruin. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh dear, dear, I shall never try it, apostrophe, said Arthur Gride, appalled by the mention of the word, not for the world. It would be very easy to ruin me. We must be very careful, more saving than ever, with another mouth to feed. Only we mustn't let her lose her good looks, Peg, because I like to see 'em. Apostrophe, take care you don't find good looks come expensive, apostrophe, returned Peg, shaking her forefinger. But she can earn money herself, Peg, apostrophe, said Arthur Gride, eagerly watching what effect his communication produced upon the old woman's countenance. She can draw, paint, work all manner of pretty things for ornamenting stools and chairs. Slippers, Peg, watch guards, hair chains, and a thousand little dainty trifles that I couldn't give you half the names of. Then she can play the piano, and, what's more, she's got one, and sing like a little bird. She'll be very cheap to dress and keep, Peg. Don't you think she will? Apostrophe, apostrophe, if you don't let her make a fool of you, she may, apostrophe, returned Peg. A fool of me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Arthur. Trust your old master, not to be fooled by pretty faces, Peg. No, 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 nor by ugly ones neither, Mrs. Sladursky, apostrophe, he softly added by way of soliloquy. Here I saying something you don't want me to hear, apostrophe said Peg. I know you are. Apostrophe, oh dear, the devil's in this woman, apostrophe muttered Arthur, adding with an ugly leer, I said I trusted everything to you, Peg. That was all. Apostrophe, you do that, master, and all your cares are over, apostrophe said Peg approvingly. When I do that, Pex Lidersku, apostrophe thought Arthur Gride, they will be. Apostrophe, although he thought this very distinctly, he durst not move his lips lest the old woman should detect him. He even seemed half afraid that she might have read his thoughts, for he leered coaxingly upon her, as he said aloud. Take up all loose stitches in the bottle green with the best black silk. Have a skein of the best, and some new buttons for the coat, and this is a good idea, Peg, and one you'll like. I know as I have never given her anything yet, and girls like such attentions, you shall polish up a sparkling necklace that I have got upstairs, and I'll give it her upon the wedding morning, clasp it round her charming little neck myself, and take it away again next day. He. I'll lock it up for her, Peg, and lose it. Who'll be made the fool of there, I wonder, to begin with a, Peg. ... Mrs. Lidersky appeared to approve highly of this ingenious scheme, and expressed her satisfaction by various rackings and twitchings of her head and body, which by no means enhanced her charms. These she prolonged until she had hobbled to the door, when she exchanged them for a sour malignant look, and twisting her under jaw from side to side, muttered hearty curses upon the future Mrs. Pride, as she crept slowly down the stairs, and paused for breath at nearly every one. She's half a witch, I think, apostrophe said Arthur Gride, when he found himself again alone. But she's very frugal, and she's very deaf. Her living costs me next to nothing, and it's no use her listening at keyholes, for she can't hear. She's a charming woman for the purpose, a most discreet old housekeeper, and worth her weight in copper. Apostrophe, having extolled the merits of his domestic in these high terms, old Arthur went back to the burden of his song. The suit destined to grace his approaching nuptials being now selected, he replaced the others with no less care than he had displayed in drawing them from the moldy nooks, where they had silently reposed for many years. Startled by a ring at the door, he hastily concluded this operation, and locked the press, but there was no need for any particular hurry, as the discreet Peck seldom knew the bell was rung, unless she happened to cast her dim eyes upwards, and to see it shaking against the kitchen ceiling. After a short delay, however, Peg tottered in, followed by Newman Knox. Ah! Mr. Knox! Apostrophe cried Arthur Gride, rubbing his hands. My good friend, Mr. Knox, what news do you bring for me? ... Newman, with a steadfast and immovable aspect, and his fixed eye very fixed indeed, replied, suiting the action to the word, a letter. From Mr. Nickleby. Bearer waits. ... Won't you take a ... Newman looked up, and smacked his lips. ... A chair? ... said Arthur Gride. No, ... replied Newman. Thank ye. ... Arthur opened the letter with trembling hands, and devoured its contents with the utmost greediness, chuckling rapturously over it, and reading it several times, before he could take it from before his eyes. So many times did he peruse, and reperuse it, that Newman considered it expedient to remind him of his presence. Answer, ... said Newman. Bearer waits. ... True, ... replied old Arthur. Yes, yes, I almost forgot, I do declare. ... I thought you were forgetting, ... said Newman. Quite right to remind me, Mr. Knox. Oh, very right indeed, ... said Arthur. Yes. I'll write a line. I'm rather flurried, Mr. Knox. The news is ... bad? ... interrupted Newman. No, Mr. Knox, thank you. Good, good. The very best of news. Sit down. I'll get the pen and ink, and write a line in answer. I'll not detain you long. I know you're a treasure to your master, Mr. Knox. He speaks of you in such terms, sometimes, that, oh dear, you'd be astonished. I may say, that I do too, and always did. I always say the same of you. Apostrophe, that's, curse Mr. Knox with all my heart. Then, if you do, apostrophe, thought Newman, as Pride hurried out. The letter had fallen on the ground. Looking carefully about him for an instant, Newman, impelled by curiosity to know the result of the design he had overheard from his office closet, caught it up and rapidly read as follows. Gride. I saw Bray again this morning, and proposed the day after tomorrow as you suggested, for the marriage. There is no objection on his part, and all days are alike to his daughter. We will go together, and you must be with me by 7 in the morning. I need not tell you to be punctual. Make no further visits to the girl in the meantime. You have been there, of late, much oftener than you should. She does not languish for you, and it might have been dangerous. Restrain your youthful ardor for 8 and 40 hours, and leave her to the father. You only undo what he does, and does well. Yours, Ralph Nickleby. Apostrophe, a footstep was heard without. Newman dropped the letter on the same Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.